Christians across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI, Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 99.55 kHz, Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please take note of the following scheduling changes for the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Monday through Friday nights, 5 until 7 p.m., the Hour of the Time, with yours truly, William Cooper. Monday and Tuesday nights, 9 until 10 p.m., Quest for Health with Michael Cottingham. And yes, Quest for Health will be staying on the air. Thursday nights, and they made their debut last Thursday night, and it was one great program, I can tell you that right now, so don't miss it again this Thursday. Thursday nights, 9 to 11 p.m., Home Satellite Radio Show with Dan Morgan, and there is a segment on low-power FM broadcasting. Friday nights, 9 to 11 p.m., Friday Night Live with Gary Bourgeois, and on Saturday nights, 9 to 11 p.m., the best of the Hour of the Time. So make your programming and scheduling changes, and if you're an affiliate, make sure that you're carrying all of the programming for the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. We are also negotiating with several other broadcasters to come on the air with us, or I should say on the satellite with us. And then it's up to the affiliates whether they are carried on the air by the affiliates, and so far they are carrying most, if not all, of our programming, and that's for sure.
This is my daddy fishing. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper, the man that William Jefferson Clinton named in a White House memo, which Rush Limbaugh read on the air, as the most dangerous radio host in America. And it's true, ladies and gentlemen, if you count the truth as a weapon, and the socialism is nothing but a pack of lies, then the truth is the most terrible weapon that they can encounter on the battlefield. And so that really does make me the most dangerous radio host in America to the Marxist, socialist, communists who are taking over and destroying this great nation, destroying our government, destroying the Constitution for the United States of America, the Bill of Rights. And they call us anti-government. Not on your life, ladies and gentlemen, because we know what the government is. The supreme law of the land is the Constitution for the United States of America and the Bill of Rights and all amendments thereto. That is the government. That is where our loyalty lies. We are pro-government, pro-constitutional Republican government, because that is what we are supposed to have. And anything other than that is insurrection, is treason. Insanity is reigning all across this country, ladies and gentlemen. This is from the Arizona Republic, page A4, March 21st, 1997. Did I say Arizona Republic? Oh, somebody slap me. Connie, remember to slap me. Slap my ears off. I meant to say, ladies and gentlemen, as I normally do, the Arizona Repulsive. For that's what it truly is. All across the state of California, especially Southern California, they're spraying Malathion from helicopters everywhere. Not just in the fruit orchards, ladies and gentlemen, but cities. They used to come over there every night when I lived there, and they sprayed the densest populations with this stuff. Every night. For many nights, for many months, for long periods of time, and from what I understand, they still do it from time to time. And it's to eradicate the fruit fly. Now listen very carefully, because this is going to tell you just exactly how insane things are getting. They've been spending millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to eradicate the fruit fly in the state of California. But in Mill Valley, California, a California high school sophomore lost his place in the San Francisco science competition because he violated the rights of fruit flies. You didn't know fruit flies had rights? Well, this is a strange thing, because while a large, wealthy element of the government of California spends hundreds of millions of dollars to eradicate the fruit fly, this school district is tossing kids out of competition because they violated the rights of a fruit fly. Ari Hoffman, a student at Tamalpais High School in Mill Valley, who won first prize at his local science fair, was disqualified, ladies and gentlemen, from the contest last weekend because of cruelty to, get this, animals. Cruelty to animals. After some of his carefully tended fruit flies died during his experiment. The 15-year-old who was studying the effects of radiation on the reproductive patterns of fruit flies discovered that radiation kills fruit flies and estimated that he lost 35 of 200 flies in a three-month project. A member of the scientific review committee said, quote, listen carefully, that in the spirit of good science, and according to rules laid out by the State Humane Association, the animals had not received the best care, end quote. Not only is this insane, ladies and gentlemen, but the the member of the scientific review committee that called insects animals is not a scientist, doesn't know anything about science, shouldn't be on a scientific review committee, and what they did done to this young man is criminal. Especially in light of the hundreds of millions of dollars they spend just to kill 35 fruit flies every year. And people ask me why I left the state of California. Well, they don't call it the People's Republic for nothing, ladies and gentlemen, because the whole darn state is run just like this. Folks, I'm your man, and I get all of those things all of the time. People love me or hate me, there is no in-between. And you know what? I really don't give a damn. I'm not building a church, so I really don't care if you love me. And I'm not vying for a population contest. I really don't care if you hate me. What I care about is that we say freedom so that you can do those things and think those things about me, and so that I can do these broadcasts in order to keep you educated so that you can love me or hate me. That's what it's all about. Freedom. That is the common uniting bond of all Americans. I don't care who you are, I don't care what race you are, I don't care what religion you belong to, unless you understand that, we are doomed. Listen to this, more insanity. State working on a bill allowing self-defense against critters. We have reached the point, ladies and gentlemen, that if you're attacked by a grizzly bear, they have to pass legislation allowing you to protect yourself from that bear, or you're going to jail to prevent your children from being eaten at your campsite by this marauding bear. This is from the Mojave Valley, California. Whoops. More People's Republic stuff, folks. Mojave Valley, California Daily News. Friday and Saturday, March 21st and 22nd, 1997. This is found on page A6 by James Beasley, Department of Journalism, University of Arizona. Well, I guess this is not. Let me see. What is this? It doesn't say what state, so we will not assume that it's California, even though there is a Mojave Valley in California. This could be from the state of Arizona. Because written by James Beasley, Department of Journalism, University of Arizona, it's datelined Phoenix. So I don't know if this was printed in a paper called Mojave Valley Daily News in Arizona or in California. Because whoever sent it neglected to put the state. And for your future reference, folks, when you send us articles like this, we must know the name of the paper, the city, the state, the date, and the page that it appeared on. It is very important when you're citing sources so that other people can track down the information. But I'm going to go ahead and give this to you anyway, even though we don't have the state, because it's just more insanity. In the wake of a black bear attack that seriously injured a camp counselor on Mount Lemmon last summer, a bill that would allow the killing of wildlife in self-defense is winding its way through the legislature. Folks, you don't need a bill, a law, to kill an animal in self-defense if your life is threatened. Those laws are already on the books. If somebody is coming at you with a knife and they're going to kill you and you feel your life is threatened and you pick up a knife or a gun and you shoot that person and kill them, you are within the law. Courts have ruled on it over and over and over again. It is the oldest law in the world that you have a right to defend yourself. But now, you see, they've got things so turned around. And don't get me wrong, I'm not recommending that anybody kill anybody, except as a last resort, and only if you feel that they're trying to kill you or so seriously injured you that you might as well be dead. But they've got things so turned around now, ladies and gentlemen, that if a bear comes in your campsite and grabs your little girl by the throat and is ripping her head off, you can't kill that bear. Did you know that? If you do, you could go to jail. They have to pass special laws now so that you can kill the bear to save your child or to save your wife or your husband or to save yourself from a wild animal. You know, one of the most chilling photographs that I've ever seen in my life, and I still have it here in our files somewhere, is of a family on a hiking trail in California. And someone is taking their picture. And right behind the little child, it's a mother and father and a couple of children, and one of them is real small. Right behind this child, in the bushes, right behind the child, you can see a mountain lion getting ready to spring. Now, I guess somebody made a big noise or something, and the mountain lion did not spring on this child. They didn't even know the mountain lion was there because the camouflage of these animals works so well in the wild. that it wasn't until weeks and maybe even months later that in going through these photographs, a family member happened to spot the mountain lion in the bushes in the tall grass behind the child. Chilling photograph. The child came so close to death. And none of those people were armed. They had nothing except backpacks. No weapons of any kind, out walking in the wilderness where wild animals live and sometimes will attack a small child or an invalid or a helpless human. Most animals will not attack a healthy human being except under rare and extreme circumstances. But nevertheless, the possibility exists. They will attack children. Can you believe this? The bill comes in response to a Game and Fish Department policy that allows prosecution of people who killed wildlife, even in self-defense. There are some crazy people running this government, ladies and gentlemen. Not only the federal government, but the states as well. Crazy people. Insane people. Nuts, wacko, out of their mind. Crazy. A good friend of mine, a highway patrol officer, told me that at one point, the highway patrol of the state of Arizona and the highway patrol of the state of California came together to conduct some kind of a traffic motors stop pullover search on Interstate 40. And this was several years back. And so they had Arizona State Highway Patrol and California State Highway Patrol, and this search was being conducted on Interstate 40 inside the state of Arizona, not at the border. And legally and lawfully, the California Highway Patrol officers had no authority to participate in anything in the state of Arizona, no authority to make arrests, no authority to do anything other than a normal citizen could do, because outside of the boundary of the state of California, they have no authority whatsoever. And these guys were all, they had the highway blocked off and they're pulling cars over. And this bunch of California Highway Patrol officers saw a pistol on the dashboard of a car driven by Arizona state citizens inside the state of Arizona, and went berserk. They yanked the doors open and pulled these people out and were beating on them and twisting their arms and smashing them up against the car. Until my friend, the Arizona Highway Patrol officer, came over and said, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this?" They said, "There's a gun in the car." He said, "So what? This is Arizona. It is lawful for them to carry a gun in the car or wear a gun on their hip or in their briefcase, to carry it to the grocery store if they want to." These guys didn't believe it. They had to be told by the supervisor. And then, guess what? Guess who was in big trouble for rousting these guys because they had their pistol in plain sight, as the law requires, on the dashboard of their vehicle in the state of Arizona? You see, in California, that could get you killed by the police. In Arizona, it's no big deal. It's an everyday thing. Almost everybody in the state of Arizona is armed, owns weapons. They either have weapons in their home, in their car, or on their person, 24 hours a day, all the time. And out in rural areas, you'd be hard-pressed to find a pickup truck, or a Bronco, or a camper, or in most cases, even a regular old four-wheel automobile without a pistol or a rifle in it. But guess who was in big, big trouble over there? You see, those guys could have just sued the state of Arizona and the state of California and those officers, individual, who actually had no authority within the state of Arizona, no matter who told them they did. Could have sued them forever and ever and ever and ever and still be collecting millions of dollars. Somebody was real lucky that these fellows decided not to sue. But whose fault was that? Who put this thing together to unconstitutionally block off an interstate highway and stop cars for no probable cause whatsoever and search them? This has been going on for years. It's unconstitutional. It's unlawful. It's wrong. And who told the Highway Patrol of California that they could send officers into Arizona to act like cowboys when everybody knows there's no cowboys in California? Who told them they had the authority to do that? And why does everybody go along with it just because it's happening? Nobody's questioning these things but me and a few others in this country. Why is that? Well, folks, I think I know why, but you've heard it from me so many times, I'm just going to let those of you who really honestly don't know think about it for a while. And those of you who have heard me expound upon that subject so many times, you don't really need to hear it again, do you? Now, for all of those of you who are afraid to take up the new power of the people, that is not new at all, we've always had it, but we're, you know, many of us are just now realizing it because it wasn't too long ago that we stopped listening to what people told us and really started looking at the law to figure out what's what for ourselves, as we should have been doing all along. For those of you who are afraid to take up the lance of truth and set up a low-power FM broadcasting station in your area, I want you to listen very carefully now. Listen very carefully, folks. This letter was sent to the FCC. It was sent to... It just confirms what we've known all along. He said, all you have to do is read the Constitution to know that the powers given to the federal government are few in number and exactly what they are. And if you understand that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, they cannot exceed what the Constitution limits them to. Unless they can con you into believing they have more power, which is called acting under the color of law, and then intimidate you or terrorize you so that you never, ever attempt to discover the truth, or if you do, exercise your rights. This was addressed to Mr. Reed Hunt, FCC Chairman, 1919 M Street, Northwest Washington, D.C., 20554. Dear Mr. Hunt, I notice that you personally introduce your agency as being charged with regulating interstate and international communications consisting of almost all electronic methods. This leads me to ask you, does your agency, the Federal Communications Commission, have any jurisdiction over intrastate radio communications, meaning within the state? If you do have jurisdiction, where may I find the implementing regulation in the Federal Register, and specifically what section and paragraphs would pertain to radio transmissions that do not cross state borders? Thank you very much in advance for your time to answer me. Here's the answer. From the Federal Communications Commission on their letterhead, March 3, 1997. I've been asked to respond to your letter regarding intrastate radio communications, meaning within the state. The FCC only regulates interstate and foreign commerce in radio communications. So not only does it have to be interstate for them to regulate it, it has to do with interstate commerce, because the federal government has no authority over anything else, except for a few things such as counterfeiting, piracy, and things like that. So even if you are transmitting over the state line, according to their own admission and according to the law which they sent, if you're not engaged in commerce of any kind, you're still safe. The FCC only regulates interstate and foreign commerce in radio communications. For your reference, I have enclosed a copy of Title I, Section 2, 47, United States Code 152. Also enclosed are copies of other sections and titles referred to in Title I. Respectively, they are Sections 223 through 227, Section 332, Section 301, Title VI, and Sections 201 through 205 of the Communications Act of 1934 as amended. Intrastate, meaning within the state, radio communications may be regulated by individual states, and I would recommend contacting your state utility commission for further information. This was signed Martha E. Conte, Chief Public Service Division, Office of Public Affairs. I don't know what your state utility commission does, but the utility commission for the state of Arizona does not regulate radio stations of any kind at all. Period. Now listen to this. Communications Act of 1934 as amended. Listen to this. Quote, an act to provide for the regulation of interstate and foreign communication by wire or radio and for other purposes. Purposes of Act, creation of Federal Communications Commission. For the purpose of regulating interstate and foreign commerce in communication by wire and radio so as to make available, so far as possible, to all the people of the United States without discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, or sex, a rapid, efficient, nationwide, and worldwide wire and radio communication service with adequate facilities at reasonable charges for the purpose of the national defense, for the purpose of promoting safety of life and property through the use of wire and radio communication, and for the purpose of securing a more effective execution of this policy by centralizing authority heretofore granted by law to several agencies, and by granting additional authority with respect to interstate and foreign commerce in wire and radio communication. There is hereby created a commission to be known as the Federal Communications Commission, which shall be constituted as hereinafter provided, and which shall execute and enforce the provisions of this act. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. And there's much more. This is just a little bit of all of the accumulated proof, evidence, law, treaties, etc., which all say the same thing. If you're operating within the borders of a state, not transmitting across a border or international border, or across a large body of water upon which a ship from another country can receive your signal, they have no authority to regulate, license, prohibit, fine, confiscate, seize, or in any way interfere with your activities whatsoever. Period. Simple as that. Unless you call yourself a pirate, in which case you're asking for it. Because they do have the right listed in the actual Constitution for the United States of America to regulate piracy. Now here's something that really gets me, and I've got to comment on it because I'm really angry about it. And I would seriously like for this kind of stuff to stop. That's why we established the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. It's what the Hour of the Time is famous for. Occasionally we make mistakes. When we find out about it, we always correct those mistakes. If anybody out there listens to our broadcast and hears our documentation and sources and can prove that we're wrong, we go on the air and we apologize and tell you that we're wrong and tell you what's right. But so many other people don't do that. And so many other people don't adhere to documenting and sourcing. They don't go by any legitimate or intelligent investigative or research techniques. They're wild in their accusations. Now listen to this. This was just posted recently in The Conformist. The number one counter argument against the TWA 800 Navy missile theory is that members of the guilty crew would have come forward to report Navy guilt, and because none have so far, it never happened. Well, the Navy at the highest level just came forward to admit, contrary to previous claims, that they did have three submarines off Long Island during the crash. Question: how many members of the crews of these three submarines came forward to blow the lid off of the Navy cover-up by admitting they were in the area? Answer: zero crewmen blew the cover-up. Of the three subs in the area of TWA 800, the USS Wyoming holds approximately 173 crew members. The USS Albuquerque holds 128. The USS Trepang holds 107 crew members. That's as many as 408 Navy sub crew members who were aware that their existence was being covered up. And how many ran forward to blow the lid off the cover-up? Zero crewmen came forward. Ipso facto, 100% obedience to the sub cover-up. Simple mathematics reveals that the factual basis for the number one counter to the naval missile theory is null and void. Even worse, the number one counter to the naval missile theory is contradicted by the facts in the TWA 800 case, and thus its truth correlation score is negative. Now, the only counter argument to the Navy missile theory is the Navy said they didn't do it. The same Navy that said they didn't have subs in the area and there were no exercises in the area. Now, how many of you think that that's a good argument? I know there's some of you out there who would read this and think that this guy was right. And I'm here to tell you, you're all full of crap. Number one, this guy is wrong on so many points, it's pathetic. And this is an otherwise, at least seemingly, intelligent researcher who's done some pretty good research in the past. But this stinks. The number one counter argument against the TWA 800 Navy missile theory is not that members of the guilty crew would have come forward to report Navy guilt, ladies and gentlemen. It's because there is no evidence whatsoever existing anywhere in the hands of anybody that suggests or even remotely points to the United States Navy as the guilty party. That's the number one counter argument against the TWA 800 Navy missile theory. We know it was a missile. We don't know who fired the missile. The second counter argument against the TWA 800 Navy missile theory is definitely that members of the crew, but not just the crew, ladies and gentlemen, for it's a lot more than the crew of one vessel who would have known that this happened, would have come forward to tell about it. And because absolutely none have done it so far, the United States Navy, I can say with no hesitation whatsoever, is not the guilty party. You see, because it wouldn't just be the crew members of the vessel that fired the missile, whether it be a surface vessel or a submarine. When the Navy is conducting exercises, everybody knows what everybody's doing, ladies and gentlemen. It's no secret except for the civilian and foreign population of the world. So all of the ships in the area would have known what happened, including all of the crews of all three submarines, including the crew of the Aegis missile cruiser that was on the surface, including the crews of any other ships that were in the area, including the staffs of the command centers of the operational command under whose command this exercise was taking place, including the crews of radar sites of military installations and communications centers all over the East Coast that belong to the United States Navy and other military installations. So there wouldn't have just been a possible number of 400 and some who would have known about it. There probably would have been around a couple of thousand people who would have known about it. Now let me tell you something about the United States Navy. I was a member of the United States Navy, and I know this for a fact. They could not. they could not disclose and still cannot disclose without the highest permission the location of any submarine anywhere at any time, past, present, or future, because the location of our submarines is classified at the highest levels, top secret. And for anyone to disclose the location of any of our submarines in the past, in the present, or in the future at any time for any reason whatsoever is a court-martial offense. It is a serious breach of national security, and silence is mandated by the National Security Act. So this was not a cover-up that they would not tell the press that they had submarines in that area. They could not, by law, tell anyone that there were submarines in that area until such time as they were able to get the highest permission from the highest body that was able to take the responsibility for disclosing the location of our submarines. And there are a lot of reasons for this, folks, because I was also in the submarine service, that this person, Ian Goddard, and many others don't understand. All nations that have the capability monitor SOSUS, which is underwater sounds, ladies and gentlemen. They monitor them all the time. If they don't know what the sounds are, they can't correlate those sounds to anything. Some natural sounds that exist naturally in the water are known by all nations and by all navies. Some sounds appear at random and nobody knows what they are. Some sounds may be from a ship on the other side of the world, and that sound may have mixed with so many other sounds that by the time it gets to whatever is picking it up, nobody can identify what it is. Sonar detection of submarines and ships has become extremely sophisticated. To tell the location of a submarine at any point in history, at the present, or in the future, allows sounds picked up by sonar detectors to be processed electronically and identified with the location of that submarine, and so that they can identify those sounds again and tell where submarines are and exactly what submarines are there and what equipment they have on them, is the reason that the locations of our submarines can never be given out to anyone. The fact that they have admitted that there were three of our atomic submarines in that area on that night means that the Navy is under such pressure right now that they're even violating the National Security Act and giving away information that could allow the enemies of the United States of America to be more easily able to pinpoint and identify our submarines. And that, in my estimation, is criminal. There is no evidence whatsoever that points to the United States Navy as having fired a missile on that night, or as having fired a missile which struck TWA Flight 800. These wild ravings and accusations are insane, irresponsible, unwarranted, and unforgivable. And this has got to stop. You all know me. I broke the story on this broadcast, first in the entire world, that it was a missile which brought down TWA 800. However, no one in this world, except the culprits who did it, knows who fired that missile or why. If it were the United States Navy, and if there were any proof that it were the United States Navy, I would be the first to identify it and demand a full accounting on this broadcast, and you all know it. I'm going to tell you something else, too. For the same reasons they couldn't cover up the USS Vincennes shooting down the Iranian airliner in the Persian Gulf, they couldn't silence the United States Navy shooting down TWA 800. Simply because too many people would know about it. Too many good Americans who have a conscience And while at the highest level of this government, there may be socialists and Marxists and communists in control, exercising the authority to bring down this country and establish their one-world totalitarian socialist government, the average seaman and petty officer in the Navy has no such ambition and would be the first to oppose it if, in fact, they knew about it and understood it. They are the last people in the world who would ever cover up the accidental or purposeful downing of an unarmed passenger plane by a missile fired from any vessel in the United States Navy. Those seamen and petty officers and junior officers and, yes, even some senior officers probably would come forward and spill the beans by the hundreds, ladies and gentlemen. And for this man, to say that they would not, and that they could be silenced by an order, which would be an unlawful order, by the way, which they would be bound to disobey, and would not report something that regulations and the law requires that they do report, is absolute blathering bullshit. It could not and would not ever happen. And comparing the fact that submariners would not come forward and tell the press where their submarines were at, to not coming forward to tell the press that a United States Navy vessel shot down an unarmed airplane full of passengers, is two different things altogether, ladies and gentlemen, and cannot be equated with each other. It is not even apples and oranges. To say that it's apples and oranges is doing it an injustice. These sailors did what they're supposed to do. They have protected, by not coming forward and telling the location of their submarines, submarine crews now, and in the future, on duty all around the world. And they have protected the ability of the United States Navy to protect us in time of war with those submarines and with their ability to remain undetectable. It is their duty not to disclose that information. It is their duty, and they would have fulfilled that duty, to come forward and talk if, in fact, the United States Navy had shot down an unarmed air passenger liner. For any reason, accidental, purposeful, it wouldn't make any difference, and you could never, ever, in a million years, get a crew of any vessel of the United States Navy to purposely shoot down an airplane full of innocent people and never say a word about it. And anybody who ever tells you anything to the contrary is a bold-faced liar. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They're our people in Phoenix who specialize in non-reportable, non-confiscatable hard assets. Real money. Real money. Now, most of you don't even know what I'm talking about. Those of you who listened to this broadcast for many years or who have listened and learned from Stephen Jacobson's Wake Up America and from other broadcasts that we've done, of course you know. And some of you have taken the steps to make sure that your family is not destitute in time of extreme emergency, when you will not be able to get your hands on anything with which to perform the normal functions of trade. Most people did not learn any lessons from the Los Angeles riots. I did. Most of us who understand what's coming at some point in the future, we look at these things to give us clues that will tell us what the conditions will be in a breakdown of the normal, everyday conduct of society. And one of the things, ladies and gentlemen, that we saw was that if you don't have a gun, your life isn't worth a nickel. Number two, if you don't have a gun, your property isn't worth a nickel. For the only property that was saved was the property of the Korean shop owners who stood on their roof and stood in back of and in front of and on the sides of their business with family members carrying guns who were able to prevent their property from being destroyed or looted. People with guns were not attacked and beaten. Number three, people who had not saved money and couldn't get their hands on money quickly soon found themselves without any money, for it was several days before law and order was restored. Number four, the supermarkets were empty. Empty within 36 hours. And there was no food available anywhere. People stood at the entrances to supermarkets and threatened the lives of the clerks and the owners because they had no food left to sell them or give them. People burned their own homes and the homes of their neighbors and the businesses of their neighbors and friends, and looted the homes and businesses of their neighbors and friends. And folks, don't wave fingers and say, "Oh, they were blacks and it was a black thing." Because I'm telling you right now, I have studied history and all peoples everywhere do the same thing if there is a total and complete breakdown of the social and law enforcement order. And it will happen in your neighborhood should any such social dissipation occur. You would be amazed at who runs amok amongst you when there are no restraints or consequences placed upon them, and where they have a reasonable idea that they will remain anonymous and that their deeds will never be known. There's only one thing that all peoples everywhere in every country on this whole earth recognize as money in such situations, and that's gold and silver coin. And I urge you to get your hands on some, so call Swiss America Trading right now at 1-800-289-2646 and get your hands, ladies and gentlemen, on some gold and or silver coin. Don't tell your neighbors that you've done this. Don't even tell your family members that you've done this. Do not display it or show it off. Secure it in a safe place that only you know about, and that only you will be able to get to and get this real money to use when you need it. Anything other than what I've just advised you is insanity. And I'm not advising you to get this to make a big killing on the fluctuations of the commodities market. Not at all. But to preserve your assets, or at least a portion of your assets, and have on hand during terrible emergencies where that may be the only thing that can buy you passage or save your life, or purchase a gun and ammunition or food to feed your family with. I hope you understand. 1-800-289-2646. Tell them you're a listener to the Hour of the Time, and you'll get red carpet treatment, I guarantee it. And while you're at it, thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Like we have another piece of equipment going out. This clearly says, this CD, folks, clearly says that it's on a disc and a position on that disc where it clearly is not. Yep, it's totally out of whack here, which means we may not have any music for the rest of the broadcast. And if we don't, that's okay. Music is not essential, however, I think it adds quite a bit. In fact, to me, it's necessary. I need music. I need to take a drink of water once in a while and sort of catch my breath, if you know what I mean. Well, and this is a brand new piece of equipment. I don't know what to do sometimes. Sometimes these things make me crazy. We'll try it. During the next spot where we need music, we'll try it and see what happens. And if the same thing plays, then I'm going to rip this out of its rack and throw it in the trash can. And then later I will come and pick it out, try to find someone who can repair it. Tulsa World, Tulsa, Oklahoma, March the 6th, 1997. It's not all insanity. State senators rejects child support plan. Move could cost Oklahoma $900 million. So what? By Chuck Irvin, World Capital Bureau. Oklahoma City. Opposing procedures to collect child support from deadbeat parents, the state Senate thumbed its nose at the federal government Wednesday and refused to pass a welfare bill, an action that could cost Oklahoma up to $900 million in federal funds. You see, the first erroneous conclusion here by old Chuck Irvin of the World Capital Bureau is that it would cost Oklahoma $900 million. The federal government has absolutely not one penny, ladies and gentlemen, that did not come from us first. All Oklahoma has to do is keep that money from going to Washington, and they don't lose anything because they didn't get part of it back. But you see, if they're saying they're losing $900 million here, Oklahoma is probably really losing a couple of billion that it sent to Washington, D.C. and will never see. You see, most of what you send to Washington, D.C. goes to pay the big bureaucracy that can only exist if they institute programs to make you think they're going to give you some of your own money back for free, for nothing. Oh, what fools we mortals be. But is the reason that Oklahoma rejected this is because they don't want the children to be paid by their deadbeat parents? No, not at all. You see, although the bill's author said it merely implements laws mandated last year by the Republican Congress, Senate Republicans led the fight against it. When the vote came, however, they were joined by an equal number of Democrats. Even some Democrats understand the insanity in some of this stuff. SB 706 by Senator Bernice Kane, D. Oklahoma City, failed 17-26. Kane asked that it be reconsidered, and he will have until next Tuesday to round up the 25 votes needed to pass the 48-member Senate. Opponents of the bill argued it allows unwarranted government intrusion into the lives of law-abiding citizens, and that's the real reason that this bill was defeated and that these things should never be passed. It's just like the cops, folks, all over this country. The cops were all for disarming the average citizen until a bill was introduced that disarmed some of the cops. And then, oh no, we can't have that. The cops came up in arms. It's like I always told you. You take one right away from one citizen, you have stripped it from us all. This is government run amok, said Senator Jim Williamson, Republican, Tulsa. This is the dark side of welfare. This is Big Brother 1984 and 1997. Senate Minority Leader Bill Gustafson, Republican, El Reno, said it is time for Oklahoma to stage its own Boston Tea Party to protest an oppressive federal government. Much of the bill is aimed at collecting back child support. One of the provisions would allow the state to revoke driver's licenses and hunting and fishing licenses from deadbeat parents who refuse to pay child support. That's right. You want a father to pay child support or a mother to pay child support? Take away their driver's license so they can't go to work. That's really smart. That's just about the most brilliant thing I've ever heard of in my life. Hunting and fishing licenses, who cares? Does anybody care? Well, folks, I do. You see, these people haven't been tried and convicted of anything. What about due process of law? You want to take away their hunting and fishing license and their driver's license? You better have a law that provides for that if they're convicted of certain crimes, and you better apprehend them, charge them, try them under the law, and convict them before you do it. You see, this has nothing to do with people who've been convicted of anything. They just want somebody to walk in and say, oh, Joe hasn't paid me for these children for the last 6 months. And some stupid government bureaucrat is going to fill out a form and send it to law enforcement. And law enforcement is going to confiscate his fishing license, hunting license, and driver's license with no charges, no trial, no conviction, no due process, and that is un-American, ladies and gentlemen. That's why this bill was defeated. Kane warned the recalcitrant senators that federal government can withhold federal money not only for aid for dependent children, but also for Medicaid if Oklahoma refuses to adopt the mandated provisions. That's great, folks. Let the federal government withhold it from you. And then you're not obligated to pay any of the taxes associated with it that go to Washington. You can keep that money in your own communities, and you can do more and better work for your communities than you ever could by sending it first to the federal government, having them set up a great bureaucracy which bleeds the money dry, and then bringing back a little portion of it for your community. Don't you understand yet? Who cares? Let them take it away. Create your own. You see, this country was founded upon communities taking care of themselves. And the more money you keep in your community, the better care you can take of your community. Much better than the federal government could ever pretend to do. For every dollar that leaves your community to go to the federal government, you only get back a few little pennies of that dollar. If you ever get it back. Folks, if you'd have kept the whole dollar in your community, you could have invested it in a secure investment program, and you could use the money to really help those in your community who really need it, and only for the time that they really need it. And when they get back on their feet, you can help them get back into being a productive member of the community. Instead of creating great bureaucracies upon which people learn to suck from for the rest of their lives. socialism, creates victims, and then creates great bureaucracies to care for those victims until the entire population is nothing but a mass of victims dependent upon a big brother which sucks the lifeblood out of all the victims in order to take care of them. Listen to what the answer was. If we have to lose federal money, we'll just have to lose federal money, said Senator Frank Sheridan, Democrat from Henrietta. Just tell them to shove it. If we take away their hunting and fishing licenses, we'll have a war on our hands. If these socialists keep screwing around with red-blooded Americans, folks, I can guarantee you there's going to be a war. It's not a mystery to those of us who really understand and care. Senators also objected to provisions that would require banks to furnish records on all depositors and allow the Department of Human Services to access financial records of any divorced person who is not the custodial parent, even if they aren't delinquent on child support payments. Now do you understand? But you see, even if I hadn't read that last paragraph to you, all the rest that I talked about before is reason enough. You people don't even know what's happening in this country, most of you. It's sad to say some of you don't care. You hear some pompous jerk get up in your state legislature and start hammering about all these people who aren't paying their child support, and he wants to pass this, that, and this legislation and introduce this in the Congress in Washington, D.C. to straighten this out, and the next thing you know, the Gestapo is running loose. Senators also objected to provisions that would require banks to furnish records on all depositors and allow the Department of Human Services to access financial records of any divorced person who is not the custodial parent, even if they aren't delinquent on child support payments. Now, folks, I'm going to tell you the truth right now. Some of you are not going to want to hear it, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway. Most parents who refuse to pay child support don't do it because they're trying to hurt the children. They don't do it, ladies and gentlemen, because they don't have the money or can't get the money, although that is the case in some instances. If the person, whether it's male or female, just doesn't have the money, what are you going to do to the person? Throw them in jail? Then you're going to have debtors' prisons in America and no hope of ever paying any money to help those children grow up. The truth is that most parents who refuse to pay child support do it because they are denied access to their children. And until the courts and the socialist scumbags who run these courts rectify that problem, you're always going to have this problem of not paying child support. And until parents who are granted custody of the children realize that to deny the other parent visitation and access to his or her children is a crime that injures the children irreparably. Until they learn that, you're always going to have this kind of problem. You're dealing with human nature here, folks. And human nature says that, hey, these are my children. I love them. I love them deeply. Just because this woman and I, or if it's a woman, this man and I, couldn't get along with each other, why do the children have to suffer by losing one parent forever
because the one that gets custody is vindictive and hateful and mean and spiteful. And the other parent says, well, to hell with this. I love my children. I can't see them. This is a pain I can't bear. I'm not paying any money. She just goes out and spends it anyway. Or he just used it to buy a new boat with. That's the truth. That's not what you want to hear, but that's the truth. And that's all you're ever going to hear on this show is the truth. Now, as far as these Germans and their bases in this country, you don't know the half of it, folks. 1st German Air Force Training Squadron, USA, Box 800, Building 283, Holloman Air Force Base, Alamogordo, New Mexico, 88330-8040. German Air Force Headquarters, 1021 10th Street, Holloman Air Force Base. Federal Republic of Germany Armed Forces Administrative Agency, Fort Bliss, Texas. German Air Force Air Defense School, Fort Bliss, Texas. German Air Force Language School, Lackland Air Force Base, San Antonio, Texas. German Air Force Transportation Center, west of the Mississippi River, care of American West Freight Air Freight, El Paso International Airport, El Paso, Texas. German Air Force, unknown mission, Shepherd Air Force Base, Wichita Falls, Texas. German Air Force Team, PZH 2000, Yuma Proving Grounds, Arizona, Yuma, Arizona. German Air Force, mission unknown, China Lake, California. German Armed Forces Command, 10 North Services Road, Dulles International Airport, 20041. Mr. Rupp is the contact person. Telephone 703-661-5001. Fax 703-661-6313. For years before the permanent foreign military base, the German Air Force Base, was set up on United States soil at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. For years, German pilots were being brought to this country, and they were being flown around the state of Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Colorado, Idaho, Nevada. That's right, folks. In small planes as passengers, in order to educate them and acquaint them with the terrain of the land that they would be flying in as part of the peacekeeping forces of the New World Order when the United States of America finally is taken down. And there's going to be more. Just recently, over 800 trucks full of German military equipment and approximately as many containers left the port of Houston for New Mexico. You had better wake up, ladies and gentlemen. They're bringing in foreign military forces in small units, a little at a time, and stationing them all around this country. They are bringing in foreign military equipment in huge, tremendous quantities and are storing it at designated spots all over this country because when the American people finally catch on to what is happening, they know there's going to be a war in this country. They know that American patriots will fight for the restoration of the Constitutional Republic and for their freedom. And it's not going to be American troops that we face. It will be foreign troops under the banner of the United Nations as peacekeepers in the United States of America, or, more correctly, Region 1 of the New World Order. Didn't like to hear that either, did you? Well, that's too bad. Let's try this now. It works.
It's coming through a hole in the air of those men. from the fields, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly fair. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the decay, democracy is coming to the USA.
V.I. Lenin said, and I quote, "Democracy is indispensable to socialism." Premier Gorbachev said in his book Perestroika, and I quote, "Do not be dismayed. We have not lost sight of our vision or of our goal. We have not lost." V.I. Lenin said, "Democracy is indispensable to socialism." End quote. I wonder how many of you are so far gone, so propagandized, that you really believe all this democracy stuff. I wonder how many of you never really understood that this is a constitutional republic, was never a democracy, was never intended to be democracy. Democracy will only lead to socialism. How many of you knew that? Better yet, how many of you have the guts to admit it? Are you listening, folks? If we were always a democracy, how come it's coming to the USA? Are you listening to the words? Do you know who this man is? Do you care? Democracy is but a code word for socialism. You had better learn that quick. Thank you.
to the shore of me, past the reefs of greed, to the squalls of sea. Sail on.
If the Soviet Union was really a failure, ladies and gentlemen, how come we're adopting all of their failed social programs? And the government.
That hope is still green, but I'm stubborn as those garbage bags of time cannot decay. I'll jump, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. The monster see it coming to the USA.
Anybody have answers for those questions? No. Ronald Reagan saved us from the mighty evil empire and we won the Cold War? you really believe that? You know that when Ronald Reagan was the head of the Screen Actors Guild in Hollywood, California, that everybody in Southern California called him Red Ronnie? Did you know that? Did you know that his acting role as President of the United States was the best role he ever had? Did you know that? It's true. Did you know that he spent more money in his 8 years in office than the combined expenditures of every other president in the entire history of this country? You want to really know why you all loved Ronald Reagan? You want me to throw it in your face? I will. Because here's the truth. He could get up there and he could spout his lines and make you all feel so good. While at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, placing this country in the greatest debt that has ever materialized upon the face of this earth ever in the history of the world. He spent more money in 8 years than all other presidents' administrations in the entire history of this country combined. He didn't win the Cold War. He paved the way for socialism. He paved the way for the collapse of this economy. And you know why you all loved him? Here's the real reason. Because he threw money everywhere. Money that he didn't have, that the government didn't have, that we didn't have. He spent so much money that money was free almost. It was available to anybody that wanted it, any time they wanted it, in any amount that they wanted. And according to the basis nature of humanity, people loved him for that. But all of you who loved him for that never thought once about who was going to pay it back, how long it's going to take, or just exactly what it was going to do as a consequence to the future of this country. But you're going to find out. And you're going to find out not too far in the future. He played upon the temptations of the mob, and the mob loved him for it. Want some more? Let me give you some more. I've already read this over the air here at 101.1 FM in Eager, now doing on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. The SAPS. P.O. Box 91, Westminster, Maryland, 21156. Telephone 410-857-4441. Fax 410-857-5249. That's the SAPF, P.O. Box 91, Westminster, Maryland, 21156. Telephone 410-857-4441. Fax 410-857-5249. Why should you write all that down? Well, because you can make $10,000 off of this if you can prove anything that I'm going to read to you wrong. If you can prove this is wrong, they will pay you $10,000 in Federal Reserve notes. That's right, folks. This is an easy way for you to make money. And this just isn't extended to the listening audience. It's extended to any agent of the Internal Revenue Service or any agent of government, any attorney, any CPA, anybody who can prove this wrong will receive $10,000. And I know that this is right because I've done the research. I've been dealing with this for years. You see, I discovered this years ago. And I decided not to bow to mammon any longer. And I do not. I do not, will not. And if they come to get me for protecting my rights and standing up for my rights, I'd rather die on my doorstep protecting my rights, my family, and my property than give in and kiss the feet of mammon. Then bow to tyranny and pay tribute because I'm afraid. That's enslavement, and I will not be a slave. Anybody, this is the time to put up or shut up. I keep hearing all of these people attacking us, telling us we're wrong. Well, if we're wrong, prove it. This organization will pay you $10,000. It's as simple as that. Prove it wrong. Here goes. I'm going to give it to you right now. Listen carefully. Tape this. Prove it wrong. And if you can prove it wrong, you're $10,000 richer. Fact number one. Our founding fathers created a constitutional republic as our form of government. The Constitution gives the federal national government limited powers granted by the people. All powers not delegated to the United States are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. The Union was created to be the servant of the people. The United States Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Article 6, Clause 2. Fact number 2. The Constitution gives the Congress the power to lay and collect taxes to pay the debts of the government, provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, subject to the following rules pertaining only to the two classes of taxation permitted. Direct taxes, which are subject to the rule of apportionment among the states of the Union, and indirect taxes, imposts, duties, and excises, subject to the rule of uniformity. Fact number 3. The government is not allowed by either one of the two classifications to tax citizens or permanent resident aliens of the United States of America directly. The intent of the founders was to keep the government the servant and to prevent it from becoming the master. See Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3 of the United States Constitution. Fact number 4. The census is taken every 10 years to determine the number of representatives to be allotted to each state and the amount of a direct tax that may be apportioned to each state, determined by the percentage its number of representatives bears to the total membership in the House of Representatives. Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3, and Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4. Fact number 5. It was established in the Constitutional Convention of 1787 that the Supreme Court of the United States would have the power of judicial review, in effect, the power to declare laws passed by the United States Congress to be null and void if such a law or laws was or were in violation of the Constitution, to be determined from the original intent as found in Madison's notes recorded during the convention, the Federalist Papers, and the ratifying conventions found in Eliot's debates. Fact number 6. Due to the characteristics of the second classification of taxation, The Supreme Court called it an indirect tax, and it is divided into three distinct taxes: imposts, duties, and excises. These taxes were intended to provide for the operating expenses of the government of the United States. See Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. Fact number 7. Duties and imposts are taxes laid by government on things imported into the country from abroad and are paid at the ports of entry. Fact number 8. The Supreme Court says that excises are taxes laid upon the manufacture, sale, or consumption of commodities within the country, upon licenses to pursue certain occupations, and upon corporate privileges. See Flint v. Stone, Tracy Company, 220, United States Supreme Court, 107, 1911. Fact number 9. In 1862, Congress passed an act, law, to create an income duty to help pay for the war between the states. A duty is an indirect tax which the federal government cannot impose on citizens or residents of a state having sources of income within a state of the Union. Fact number 10. Congress passed an act in 1894 to impose a tax on the incomes of citizens and resident aliens of the United States. The constitutionality of the act was challenged in 1895, and the Supreme Court said the law was unconstitutional because it was a direct tax that was not apportioned as the Constitution required. See Pollock v. Farmers Loan and Trust Company, 157 United States Supreme Court, 429, 1895. Fact number 11. In 1909, Congress passed the 16th Amendment to the Constitution that was allegedly ratified by three-quarters of the states. It is known as the Income Tax Amendment. Fact number 12. Some officials within the Internal Revenue Service, along with professors, teachers, politicians, and some judges, have said and are saying that the 16th Amendment changed the United States Constitution to allow a direct tax without apportionment. Fact number 13. These persons are not empowered to interpret the meaning of the United States Constitution. As stated in fact number 5, this power is granted by the Constitution to the Supreme Court, but limited to the original intent. The Supreme Court has no power to function as a social engineer, to amend or alter the Constitution as they have been doing. A change or amendment can only be lawfully done according to the provisions of Article 5 of that document. Fact number 14. The United States Supreme Court said in 1916 that the 16th Amendment did not change the United States Constitution because of the fact that Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3, and Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4 were not repealed or altered. The United States Constitution cannot conflict with itself. The court also said that the 16th Amendment merely prevented the income duty from being taken out of the category of indirect taxation. See Bruchhaber v. Union Pacific Railroad Company, 240 United States Supreme Court, page 16. Fact number 15. After the Supreme Court decision, the Office of the Commissioner of Internal Revenue issued Treasury Decision 2313, dated March 21, 1916, Volume 18, January-December 1916, page 53, and it states in part, quote, "It is hereby held that income accruing to non-resident aliens in the form of interest from the bonds and dividends on the stock of domestic corporations is subject to the income tax imposed by the Act of October 3, 1913. End quote. Fact number 16. In another Supreme Court decision in 1916, the court, in clear language, settled the application of the 16th Amendment. By the previous ruling, Bruchhaber, it was settled that the provisions of the 16th Amendment conferred no new power of taxation but simply prohibited the previous complete and plenary full power of income taxation possessed by Congress from the beginning from being taken out of the category of indirect taxation to which it inherently belonged. See Stanton v. Baltic Mining Company, 240 United States Supreme Court, 112. Fact number 17. The United States Constitution gives the national government the exclusive authority to handle foreign affairs. Congress has the power to pass laws concerning the direct or indirect taxation of foreigners doing business in the United States of America. It has possessed this power from the beginning, needing no amendment to the U.S. Constitution to authorize the exercise of it. Fact number 18. The direct classification of taxation was intended for use when unforeseen expenses or emergencies arise. Congress, needing funds to meet the emergency, can then borrow money on the credit of the United States. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 2. The Founding Fathers intended that the budget of the United States be balanced and a deficit be paid off quickly and in an orderly fashion. Through a direct tax, the tax bill is given to the states of the Union. The bill is apportioned by the number of representatives of each state in Congress. Therefore, each state is billed its apportioned share of the direct tax equal to the number of votes its representatives could employ to pass the tax. How the states raise the money to pay the bill is not a federal concern. Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3. Fact number 19. In the Bruchaber and Stanton cases, the Supreme Court said the 16th Amendment did not change income taxes to another classification. So, if the income tax is an indirect excise tax, then how is it applied and collected? According to the Supreme Court, excises are taxes laid upon the manufacture, sale, or consumption of commodities within the country, upon licenses to pursue certain occupations, and upon corporate privileges. The requirement to pay such taxes involves the exercise of the privilege, and if business is not done in the manner described, no tax is payable. It is the privilege which is the subject of the tax and not the mere buying, selling, or handling of goods. Flint v. Stone Tracy Company, 220, United States Supreme Court, 110. Question. If all rights come from God, citizens of the states retained all rights except those surrendered as enumerated in the Constitution for the United States of America, and privileges are granted by government after application, then what is the privilege that the income tax is against? The answer. As established in the Constitution for the United States of America, the federal government cannot directly tax a citizen living within the states of the Union. Citizens possess rights. These rights cannot be converted to privileges by government. The only individuals who would not have these rights and liable to regulation by government are non-resident aliens doing business and working within the United States are receiving domestic source profits from investments, and United States citizens working in a foreign country and taxable under treaties between the two governments. Fact number 20. Withholding agents withhold income taxes. The only section in the entire Internal Revenue Code that defines this authority is Section 7701, small a, 16. Fact 21. Withholding of money for income tax purposes, according to Section 7701, small a, 16, is only authorized for Sections 1441, non-resident aliens, 1442, foreign corporations, 1443, foreign tax-exempt organizations, and 1461, withholding agent liable for withheld tax. Fact number 22. Internal Revenue Manual, Chapter 1, 100, Organization and Staffing, Sections 1, 132.75, states, the Criminal Investigation Division enforces the criminal statutes applicable to income, estate, gift, employment, and excise tax laws involving United States citizens residing in foreign countries and non-resident aliens subject to federal income tax filing requirements. Period. Fact number 23. The implementation of Internal Revenue Service Treasury Regulation 1.1441-5 is explained in Publication 515 on page 2. If an individual gives you, the domestic employer or withholding agent, a written statement in duplicate stating that he or she is a citizen or resident of the United States, and you do not know otherwise, you may accept this statement and are relieved from the duty of withholding the tax. Fact number 24. The only way a United States citizen or permanent resident alien living and working within a state of the Union can have taxes deducted from his or her pay is by voluntarily making an application on Form SS-5 to obtain a Social Security number and then entering that number on an Internal Revenue Service Form W-4 and signing it to permit withholding of employment taxes. Form W-4, Employees Withholding Allowance Certificate. That is why the Internal Revenue Service pressures you to obtain a Social Security number for your children at birth, and why they pressure children to apply for a Social Security number and for employers to obtain the voluntary execution of Form W-4 immediately from all those being hired. However, no federal law or regulation requires workers to have a Social Security number or sign a Form W-4 to qualify for a job. Don't believe it? Ask Taco Bell. They refused to employ someone simply for the reason that they would not supply their Social Security number or fill out a Form W-4. They lost in court and had to pay several million dollars to that young person who now does never have to work again for the rest of his life. Fact number 25. Oh, and by the way, you can check that by going down to Taco Bell, ladies and gentlemen, and asking for an employment application. On there, you will see that the tendering of your Social Security number is not required. They learned the hard way from someone who knew the law. Fact number 25. Karl Marx wrote in his Communist Manifesto, 10 planks needed to create a communist state. The second plank is a heavy or progressive income tax, second only to the abolition of private property. Fact number 26. The attorney who successfully challenged the Income Tax Act of 1894, Joseph H. Choate, recognized the communist hand in the shadows. He told the United States Supreme Court, quote, "The act of Congress, which we are impugning," which means challenging is false, "before you, is communistic in its purposes and tendencies, and is defended here upon principles as communistic, socialistic, what shall I call them, populistic, as ever have been addressed to any political assembly in the world," end quote. That's why I've told you over and over again on this broadcast, the populist cause is at its birth and ever since been a socialist movement. Fact number 27. The Supreme Court agreed, and Mr. Justice Field wrote the court's opinion, concluding with these prophetic words, quote, "Here I close my opinion. I could not say less in view of questions of such gravity that go down to the very foundations of the government. If the provisions of the Constitution can be set aside by an act of Congress, where is the course of usurpation to end? The present assault upon capital is but the beginning. It will be but the stepping stone to others, larger and more sweeping, till our political contests will become a war of the poor against the rich, a war growing in intensity and bitterness." And isn't that the case? And need we say more? Fact number 28. Internal Revenue Code, Section 6654, small e, 2, small c, states, No tax liability if the individual was a citizen or resident of the United States throughout the preceding taxable year. Internal Revenue Service contends the success of the self-assessment system depends on voluntary compliance, end quote. And evidently so. The conclusion of facts, ladies and gentlemen, all rights come from God. It is the founding principle upon which this nation was based. Without someone to answer to, everything becomes a subjective determination by each individual. Morals, ethics, and laws disintegrate. All rights come from God. The United States government can only exercise powers given to it by we, the people, through the Constitution for the United States of America. The income tax is an indirect tax. There is no section of law in the Internal Revenue Code, Title 26, United States Code, making a citizen or a resident working and living within a state of the Union liable to pay the income tax, which is an indirect excise duty tax, so ruled by the United States Supreme Court. And this is not all of the reasons, ladies and gentlemen. There are many more. Many more. Many more. If you can prove anything that I just read to you wrong, if you can prove the whole contention of this to be wrong, ladies and gentlemen, the SAPF, P.O. Box 91, Westminster, Maryland, 21156, telephone 410-857-4441, fax 410-857-5249, will pay you $10,000 in Federal Reserve notes. How do you like that? A chance for you to make a lot of money here. All of those of you who know all about it, go for it. I'm telling you right now that everything stated here is correct. Absolutely correct. If it were not, the SAPF would have been destroyed and would be in jail long ago, but they're not. They're one of the biggest thorns, along with me and some of the other people who have really studied the law, in the side of the phony, lying, deceitful, tyrannical Internal Revenue Service that has ever existed. Did you know that the Internal Revenue Service is not an agency of the United States government? Well, it's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. It is not an agency of the United States government. That's right. And there's much, much more I can tell you about. You see, because if it was an agency of the United States government, and specifically of the Treasury Department, you can find it listed under the organizational structure of the Treasury Department in the United States Code as required by law. However, no such listing exists. You've been conned. You've been had for many, many years. Ain't that a shame? I've been telling you for years that fascists and Nazis are not right-wing, ladies and gentlemen. It is a function of socialism. Always has been, always will be. You see, a scale measures two extremes. How can you have Hitler on the right and Khrushchev on the left at the same time? It doesn't work. The scale measures two extremes. Now, pay attention. Pay attention because you've been conned all your life about this. On the far left is the control extreme. Extreme. Excuse me. Try talking for 2 hours and your tongue might get a little tight also. On the far left is the control extreme. It is communism. as it has been practiced in the world and not as they will always throw in your face, the idealistic form of communism, which never has been applied, and in any instance where it even came close, never worked. Communism is defined as total ownership and control of everyone and everything by the state, where the state is more important than anything or anyone or any group of people, and that people and groups of people and entire populations can be sacrificed for the furtherance of the survival and the well-being of the state rather than for the people or the individual. They own and control everything. It is the ultimate insult to intelligence. How can the creator be subjugated to his imaginary creation? That's what a state is. It is an imaginary creation of people who create it, who make it through writings of rules and procedures and regulations, limitations and powers on paper, and then hire people to implement these rules, regulations, and etc., etc., etc. How can this thing that only exists on paper and in the mind become more powerful than that which created it? Nevertheless, that's the way it works. On the extreme right of the scale is the other extreme, which is the total absence of all ownership and control of everything. It is anarchy, ladies and gentlemen, where everything goes and the survival of the fittest reigns supreme. Somewhere near the middle, our founding fathers established a constitutional republic. It may be a little bit to the right of middle or a little bit to the left of the middle. Who cares? It's in the middle. I'm not going to argue the exact spot on the scale, but it's in the middle, and that's important. It is not at either extreme. More control moves you to the left and into fascism, socialism, and communism. Nazi literally means National Socialist German Workers' Party. That's right, folks. National Socialist German Workers' Party. Hitler socialized Germany. He created a new religion to destroy those that existed. Any move to the right means less control and more individual freedom and responsibility. If you go too far to the left, things get out of hand. There is a breakdown of the social order and of the rule by law. Which means, hey, buddy, I like that shirt. Rip! Now it's mine. What are you going to do about it? And if you make any effort to do anything about it, and he's stronger or tougher or has a bigger gun, you're just dead, that's all. It's bad, it's wrong, nobody wants it. We must have law. We must have social order. But we must have only the extent that is absolutely necessary and no more. That's what our founding fathers said. That's what they instituted. Where we are headed now is farther to the left, farther into more control, farther into what will ultimately become fascism, ruled by an oligarchy of a minority of individuals that will quickly disintegrate into total socialism under a dictatorship, and eventually the world will be ruled by communism just as the communists have always planned. That's what is happening, ladies and gentlemen. But you see, there are people who call me up and say, how can you say the Nazis were socialists? How could you possibly say that fascism is on the left? It's very simple, folks, because it's true. And here I have a letter from the United Fascist Union. P.O. Box 26020, Wilmington, Delaware, 19899-6020. Their phone number is 302-764-5099. And they basically here tell you in this letter exactly what I've been telling you for years, that I'm right. And here's what they say. Basically, the United Fascist Union is a geopolitical centrist organization. We wish to bring about a new world order based upon the corporate statism of Prime Minister Mussolini and revive the cults of pagan Babylon and pagan Rome, as was explained in our introductory movie, Things to Come, which was sent to you last year. I watched it sent chills up my spine as I recognized everything that's happening in this country. Now listen to this. Here's their membership application. I'm going to read it to you so that you'll understand that I don't ever lie to you, ladies and gentlemen. Occasionally, I may make a mistake, but I don't ever, ever lie to you. And if I make a mistake, I'll be the first one to correct it if you can prove that I'm wrong. Here, I'm going to read it to you right from their own lips, from their membership application. The United Fascist Union exists to promote American nationalism, patriotism, the American way of life, and stand against liberalism, public corruption, decadence, and democracy in all evil forms they manifest themselves in. Now listen very carefully, because they just told you a lie, which they're going to correct in a couple of sentences here. While the Fascist Union is a white civil rights organization, we will not limit our membership on the basis of race or religion, provided the applicant is a conservative of national origin. Nor will the United Fascist Union endorse the vile form of racial hatred being practiced by conventional rightist groups. We will not accept those who hate minorities or practice discrimination or do violent, stupid things as members. Now listen, ladies and gentlemen, very carefully. The main objectives of the United Fascist Union shall be, A, to institute a military dictatorship form of government over our country, B, to create and establish a universal price index which would regulate costs to corporatist utilities, making them agencies of the Fascist Union, C, to establish a transferable work point card, which would replace paper money and to replenish America's heavy industry by establishing isolationist policies, encouraging American corporations to build in our country. Sounds real good, doesn't it? Unless you're not a white racist or a white civil rights organization member. Now listen carefully. Under the corporate dictatorship, the American government would function like a corporation. Power being vested in the dictator of America, who sets atop the pyramid of government, acting both a receiver and transmitter of the people's general will. Now we're getting to the truth. The collective will of the masses would travel up the pyramid of state, be channeled through the office of the dictator of America, be transformed into constructive, benevolent programs, travel back down the pyramid of state, to which it is distributed to the masses in the form of constructive social programs. The people will be regimented, disciplined, and controlled. They will stop thinking as individuals and act as components of the corporate collective, being organized as employers, merchants, and workers, functioning as components of the collective for a common effort to development and production as per the Italian model of government. Italian, my butt, that is exactly what was going on in the Soviet Union. I don't care how you try to attempt to disguise it or name it in any other way. That is exactly what was happening. Collectivism ruled by a dictator, called a democracy, which implements social engineering. Statement of function of the United Fascist Union. It's amazing. You see? It's what Hitler did. It's what Stalin did. It's the same old thing by a different name. And it will result, if it ever comes to pass, in the same type of oppression, tyranny, misery, destructive of individuals and of all human worth and dignity. And that's the truth of the matter. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with me today and for listening so attentively, even though I know I have angered some of you. Perhaps it will stir you to search out the truth and to help us make the future better instead of worse. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you, and may God find it in His infinite mercy to save this republic.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Behind, something's not right.
Throw out your arms.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. Did you got it from play? Thank you for that.
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to go. As for yourself, I'm due for your soul.
Hillary Shalala, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike, demonic founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across this land, and Clinton saying take the mark in your right hand. While we're all dancing to the drums of uproar's right, Clinton's preparing it for another.
You've been listening to The Hour of the Dime. I'm William Cooper. Join me again tomorrow at the same time.
Out of chaos, depression, inflation, creates a panic and rape the nation. Crisis creation. Incite black and white, program agitation.
Don't make sense. You're surrounded by the UN in white and gray, the ATF submitted black from the One World Order.
But it's not new. Iron Mountain, computer beasts, and cattle mutilation. Black projects, UFOs, and weird genetic combinations. The Nazi doctors didn't die. Come on, get here. They came here with the OSS through Operation Paperclip. National ID, debit card? Yeah. Vaccination, biochip, milk carton kits, genetic engineering. Clinton says her health plans for you and your own good. Sure. And Adolf Hitler's Robin Hood.
For who?
Masonic mind manipulation. Inciting riots is crisis creation. Biochip implantation. Vaccinate your kid for UN identification.
This is the Voice of Freedom. You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, broadcasting on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio, and over 700 FM stations across the nation and around the world. The Hour of the Time is also carried on WRMI Worldwide Shortwave Radio, 9955 kHz, Monday through Friday night, 5 until 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We've just received two letters from Australia telling us about the gun control measures that are being implemented down there. They listen to this broadcast religiously.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming, All Oldies, Most of the Time. And don't forget to tune in at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Michael Cottingham with Quest for Health.
She's gonna laugh at you. Oh, tell me now.